Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Mem Tet Amud Bet by the two dots. It's four lines from the bottom. Mark quotes the Mishnah and says, "Begizei tzemer ve'ei metaltelin." One can use for hatmana these balls, tufts of wool, but they are not permissible to carry. They're still muksa. So Amar Rava, Rava seems to be qualifying that statement. It says, "Lo shonu ela shelo taman bahen." It's only if you didn't utilize them for hatmana. Aval taman bahen, if you did utilize them for hatmana, metaltelin otan, then they are no longer muksa, and you can carry them around. Eitve haumi rabbanon bar yome the Rava. So it's beginner's luck. It's first day in the Beit Midrash, and he poses this question to Rava. That's one translation of it. The other possibility is that it was Rav Idi. They used to call him Bar Bei Rav. It's the other possibility of who posed the question to Rava. He says, the Mishnah says, Tomnim Migizei Tzemer Ve'im Metaltelin Otan. It's the direct quote from the Mishnah. And then it says, Ketzad, Huo Se, how do you deal with it? Notel Et HaKisui Ve'ein No Float. You pick up the cover and they fall away by themselves. So it's clear that even though you're using their Vratmana, they still have a din of Mukse. Elit Mar Hochi Itmar. You want to say it or you want to phrase it this way, this is the way to phrase it. Tosafot doesn't love the girsa here, and I'll show you why in a second. Amar Rava, lo shonu elosh lo ichdan atmana. It's only true if he wasn't miyachedim for atmana. Ava ichdan atmana mitaltelin otan. So miyachedim for atmana, then he is mitaltel otan. So idmar nami, we have a similar statement. Idmar nami, kiata ravin amar biyochid amar basi ben shol amar rabbi lo shonu ela shlo ichdan atmana. It's as long as he hasn't been miyachedim for atmana. Ava ichdan atmana mitaltelin otan. Ravino omer, bishel eftek shanu. We're talking about wool that is from the warehouse, that is made for sale, that is definitely of commercial quality and quantities. And therefore, that's what we're talking about, has a default status of mukse. Now, going back to what was Rava's statement. Rava's statement was, Lo shono shelo taman ben. Aval taman ben mitaltelin otan. That's talking about wool in general. It's talking about normal wool. Any type of normal wool. If you utilize it for hatmana, then it no longer has the same mukse. You've now used it for something on Shabbat that is mutar. It has utility on Shabbat. It's not mukse anymore. On the other hand, our Mishnah is speaking about a case of this heftig, this commercial type of wool, which for sure retains its status as mukse, even if you use it for hatmana, because either of its price or its normal utility. But if you are miyachdan, Batmana. Yachdan here means you designate them to be used from here forward as material for hatmana. You've taken it out of that category and now made it into something that you're going to use every Shabbat. You've changed the status of it. So whereas by regular wool, simple usage of it for hatmana makes it into something that is mutar leteltel b'Shabbat, then this type of commercial wool, this warehouse wool, where you normally, or the default status would be muksa and made for sale, if you just use it for atmana, that's not enough. You have to actually designate it for atmana to change its status. And that'll be the difference. So now, if you go back, we have two statements from Rava, and the first one, which we thought was modifying the Mishnah, has nothing to do with the Mishnah. It's an independent statement. That's why Tosafot doesn't love this girsa of itmar, hachi itmar. If you want to say it this way. Because the way the Gemara has it now is that it has nothing to do with the Mishnah. It's not modifying the Mishnah. The first statement is an independent statement, which Rava says, regular wool, lo shana shlo taman bam, it's muksa unless you use it. You use it, it's not muksa anymore. Heftek, that's our Mishnah. Mishnah, you need yichdan let hatmana, which is the second statement of Rava, that if you miyachin them to use them from here to four, they will be used for the materials for hatmana, then they lose their shame muksa. Otherwise, just using them once, it's not enough to get rid of their shame muksa. Tani nami ochi, we have a breita that supports that understanding, gizi semo shel heftek. So here it's clear that we're talking about this type of wool. But on the other hand, if the balabite specifically designates them to be used, then they're no longer muksa. So you see that you can change the status, but it takes some sort of active machshava in order to change their status. The default status is not just because you use them, they're not muksa. You have to specifically state that they're going to be used for this purpose going forward, and then they don't have a shame muksa. Correct. It'd be muksa machmat chiseron kis, most likely. Now you don't have any dispensation to move it. Wool itself is muksa machmat chiseron kis because it's expensive. It's something that you're going to use for sale, and you wouldn't otherwise use it for anything else. So tana rabba barbachana kame derav. Chariot shel dekel, shegidran leitzim. He cut down these wooden pieces of the palm tree to use for wood. Chariot shel dekel are once the lulavim harden. They dry out and they harden, their leaves fall away, and the shidra and the spine turns into wood. If you cut those down to be used for wood, But then, nimlach aleihem li'yishiva, you decide after the fact that you're going to use them to sit on rather than for wood. So tzarich l'kasher. According to the Tanakhama, you have to do some sort of activity to change their status. You cut them for wood. Wood is muksa on Shabbat. And the default status of these items would be muksa, that you cannot utilize them on Shabbat. But then you decide, you know what, I really want to use them to sit down. It's not enough to say that you want to use them to sit down. You must do some sort of activity, which is tzarich l'kasher. You have to tie them, you have to bundle them to make them useful as seats, or to be able to sit down on them. Shimon Gamliel Omer, ain't tzarich l'kasher. Don't have to tie them prior to Shabbat. Hu tani lo, v'hu amar lo. He brought this braita and said, Halacha ki Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Itmar. Now we have this machloket in the form of the Amoraim. Rav Amar Kulsher. Rav says you have to tie them before Shabbat in order to remove their shame mukse. Shmuel Amar Chushev. All he has to do is in his mind say, I want it to be for Shabbat, I want it to use for sitting on, and that's enough. Rav Asi Amar, Yushev, Afo Pishlo Kisher, Afo Pishlo Chishev. Now, truthfully, Rashi has a girsa here of Yashav, which would make a lot more sense, if he has used them. Alright, if he has sat on them, that's enough. It's a indication of his change of mind, but he doesn't have to do any activity. He doesn't have to tie them, he doesn't have to think on it. He simply sat on them before Shabbat. That is sufficient to be megale da'ato, to make us understand what he's thinking. Rav is like the Tanakhama of the bright that we brought before, which he requires an action in order to change the status from mukse to something that is utility on Shabbat. Shmuel nami hu da'amar k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. Shmuel is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who says you don't need to tie it, but you still need some sort of machshava. You need to have active machshava thoughts about this item to say I want to use it on Shabbat. Ravasi damar keman. Who is Ravasi's position following? Who damar ki ay tana? He's following this tana. Tanya yotzim bikorin ubetzipa bizman shitzavan or tzavan b'shemen according to Rashi bikarchan b'mishicha. Person can go out with pikorin or like tufts of wool. Utzipa is flakes of wool. Tosafot says that a tzipa is actually a wig. It's interesting how he describes it. It says kippah. Kippah sheish batzar. Yodim ota barosha kereyach. And you put it on top of a bald person, you have this kippah that sits on top with hair coming out of it. That's basically a toupee of some sort. So these items, man shetzavan, karchan b'mishicha. Whether it's that he, tzavan normally means to dye them or color them. Over here, if you have the gears of the word shemen in there, it must be that he basted it with oil. Karchan b'mishicha, he tied them with a string, then he can go out with them. Go out with them, as Rashi says, this is used to cover over scabs or cuts on your arms or your legs in order to prevent the clothing from serrating or rubbing up against them and causing the wound to open up, the equivalent of a band-aid or bandage of some sort. If you had already done the tzav'an and karchan b'mishicha, they are permissible to go out with him. Lo tzavan, v'lo karcha mishmicha, en yotzin behen. Then you may not go out with them because you haven't designated them in any way to be utilized as quote-unquote clothing on Shabbat. In their raw state, these items would be mukse. It's only because now you need it for the specific purpose of covering your cut. How do I know that you've designated it or you plan to use it that way? It's because either it's tzavan v'shemen, which is that he oiled them, made them into something that's smooth, or whether he colored them, dyed them, and then tied them with a string to show that he's going to use it as a bandage on Shabbat. So here all he did was some sort of activity that indicates he's going to wear it, or he is wearing it prior to Shabbat. And that is sufficient. So that's what the Braita says here. If he goes out, wears them before Shabbat at all, if he did none of the above, then he is permitted to go out with them. So that's exactly what Ravasi said before. Even if you don't do all these preparatory actions to the item in order to indicate you're going to use it, the fact that you wore it is enough. That's indication enough to show that it's not muksa before Shabbat. Am Ravashi, avana namitanina. We also have a Mishnah that supports that. Kash shel gavei amita. Straw that is on top of the bed. Lo yinanenu biyado. You cannot move it directly because it's muksa. Straw in general is not something that is utilized on Shabbat. Therefore, its default status is muksa. You have it on the bed, and you want to use the straw to lay on, to become the mattress or the pillow, but you only left it piled up on the bed. So therefore, it remains muksa. You can't move it with your hand. What you do is you lie on top of it, and you move around enough until it flattens out under you, because that's tiltol min ha'atzad, which is permissible. Aval, imaya, machal behema. If they were edible, usable for the animal. Oh, Shailav kar osadin mi ba'od yom. Or you placed upon it a sheet or in a pillow before nightfall. Minano biyado. Then you can move it directly. Shma mina. There you can see that the fact that you put it into use before Shabbat is enough to remove it shei mukse. So even though generally straw is considered to be mukse, if you place a sheet over it, indicating that you're going to lie on it, or, I mean, obviously, if you do lie on it, or you put it as a pillow and you utilize it as a pillow, that's enough to remove its shame mukse. You don't have to do something active or have any specific makshava. If you just use it, you lay on it for, you know, a little bit before Shabbat, that's enough to designate it as being non-mukse anymore. Here he says you have to have a sheet on it because the sheet is indication that he will sleep on it. He's going to use it as a mat. If he just lays on top of it, and that's his plan, it seems to be sufficient. It's not, I just think they're talking about derech eretz. It's the normal way that people do. Normal people don't lay on the straw directly. They put a sheet on top of it.
Why?
If it is machal behema, that's what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said, if it is edible and food for animals, then it's okay. Then there is no question of mukse. We're talking about here when it's not machal behema. It's a straw that's not edible at this point, or it's not useful for the animals at this point. Okay, man tana de poli alei de Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. We saw before that we have three shitot now. We have the Tanakama, who says you have to take action. We have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who says that a makshava is sufficient. And then we had Rav Asi, who is subscribing to this other Tana, who says that if as long as you utilize it before Shabbat, that's enough. Now, who is the Tanakama of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? The one who argues in Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in that first braita that we quoted. Who is that Tanakama? That's Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva. Chiyata Rav Dimi. He went to a place. Cut them down for wood. Go and have in mind that we should be able to sit on them tomorrow. I don't know why he permitted this. I don't know if it was because the dispensation had to do with the fact that it was going to be a wedding there, or because it was a Beit Avel. But for whatever reason, he took a shortcut. He gave us a dispensation to use makshava to make him the ru'uyim for utilization. Which are both mitzvot. Because they were mitzvot, he gave them that right to do it through makshava. Dafka beit avel, oh beit mishteh de tride. They were asukim. They were involved in the preparations. They didn't have time to go and tie all the bundles up to make them ru'uyim for Shabbat. So therefore he gave them permission just to do it through machshava. Aval hocha, in a normal situation where you don't have the tirda, the preparations for the mitzvah, kashar in, if he ties them then it works, lo kashar lo, if he doesn't tie it doesn't. And that'll be the Tanakam, Rav Shimon Gamliel, that Rav subscribed to, which is that in order to remove the shame muksa, you have to take an active, you have to take an action, you have to do an activity, you have to tie them to show that you're taking away their shame muksa. I'm Rav Yehuda. Person can bring in a bucket full of dirt into his house, pour it down on the floor, and then use it on Shabbat. Why is that so special? Of course, he brought the dirt and he plans on using it. It's because their floors are made out of dirt. So you pour dirt on the floor, it doesn't look like it's anything different than the floor itself. That's what the Gemara said, Darish Marzutra, Mishmei de Marzutra Rabbo. That Vahushihado Karen Zavit. That's only if he specifies a location where he's going to keep it to utilize over Shabbat. If he simply pours it out on the ground, we assume he's just improving his floor. It's more flooring, he's planted, people are gonna step on it, and it's gonna flatten it out, and it'll be part of the floor itself. The only way to have it be designated for separate use is to have a specific place where you keep it, and therefore you know that that's what you're gonna use over Shabbat, and it's designated for usage, it's no longer mukse. Some rabbanan kamei the rapapa kman. Who's that like? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. That's like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Dika rabbanan. It's like rabbanan amrei beinan masa. Rabbanan or the Tanaka. I'm gonna say you need to do something active. You have to do an activity to show that this dirt is not mukse. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel simply says that makshava is sufficient. So to over here. The fact that you designate a corner for it, that's enough to take away shame mukse because you've had a makshava to use it over Shabbat. Amalu Rabbapa, filu teim rabbonon. Even the rabbanon could subscribe to this. Adkan lo kamer rabbanon debin in masse, lemidei, debar avida masse. You only require a maise when you could do a maise. What's the alternative over here? What maise are you gonna do? All you do is you bring it in, you dump it on the ground, there's nothing else to do. There's not like by the wood where you could tie it up or you can bundle it. You can do something that shows that you're not planning on using it for wood anymore. But something where there is no action that you could take, or alternative action you could take, maybe not. Let us say that this is a machloket tanaim. Because we have, you're allowed to scrape down, wash The kelim chutz miklei kesef begar tikkun, except for silver begar tikkun, which is it's really white earth or really tartar that's deposited in wine vessels. That tartar that they used to use, that it was abrasive, and they used to clean the silver with it. On those items, everything else you can clean with, but except for this one item, ha neter v'chol, if it's natron or sand, mutar, that would be totally fine. V'hatanya neter v'chol asur, natron and sand are considered to be problematic. My love, v'hamigiflegate, this is their machloket. The marsa v'bi'in and masa, one of them requires you to do some activity to it. And there's no possibility of doing sand to neter, that you can't do anything to them to say that they're not muksa. There's no bundling, there's no extra activity that you would do. Therefore, they remain muksa on Shabbat because you can't do a masa. Marsara lo bein in masa. The other one says you can't do a masa. Therefore, there is no masa to do here, and they're not the muksa anymore. It says lo de kuliyama lo bein in masa. Everybody agrees you don't need action to change their status. Lokasha. So what's the machloket here? Ha, Rabbi Yehuda. This is Rabbi Yehuda demar davar sheinu mitkaven asur. When you don't intend for something, then it's still asur on Shabbat. Shimon Damar, Dever Shem Mitkavein, Mutar. Then when it's something that you do not intend for, the consequence you do not intend for, then it is Mutar on Shabbat.
I was
going
to say, but he wants the
pouch. All right, when he's scraping them down, and the silver is a little soft, he's Mimachek. Mimachek is an Av Melacha. So that you're not allowed to do on Shabbat. If you use this Gartikon, that will for sure, without question, cause memachek, smoothing out of the item on Shabbat, and that's impermissible according to everybody. The question here is this neter v'chol, which is somewhat abrasive. He wants to clean the silver. He doesn't necessarily want to smooth the silver out. So he uses these abrasive materials to wash it, to clean it. But he doesn't intend to be memachek. It might be that it happens sometimes that it's memachek. But it's davar she'eino mitkavein. It's not a psikresh, it's not definite that it'll happen. But it could happen. If it does happen, he does not intend for it. So that's a machloket we know between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. When it comes to Melechet Shabbat, Davar She'eino Mitkaven is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Asur. Davar She'eino Mitkaven, according to Rabbi Shimon, is Mutar. So the usage of Neter and Chol over here, according to Rabbi Shimon, is permissible, because it's not for sure that you're going to be Memechek. So therefore you can use it. Rabbi Yehuda says, there's a possibility that you might do that, you can't use it. That's Asur. B'mayu kimto, what did you establish here? L'ha d'shari k'Rabbi Shimon. The braita that says it's mutar is like Rabbi Shimon. Ema seifa, let's look at the continuation of that braita. Nishan Abayis says, V'lo yochuf b'em se'aro. You may not use them to wash your hair as shampoo. Be Rabbi Shimon. Mishra k'shari. Rabbi Shimon says, no problem with that, using that as a shampoo. It's not. We have a mishnah, nazir. This is not on Shabbat itself. But a nazir chufeif, umifas face, aval lo sorek. A Nazir who has a restriction against removing hair from his head, he's allowed to shampoo, he's allowed to wash or part his hair. Aval lo sorek, he can't comb it. Combs it out, a thin comb, he's definitely going to pull hair out of his head, which is impermissible. That's a psik reshe, he's not allowed to do it. On the other hand, to shampoo, or to simply part the hair, there's no definitive outcome that he's going to pull hair out, or there's going to be hair that's released, and therefore it's permitted, according to Rabbi Shimon, who says, Davar she'enu mitkaven is mutar. So over here we see you're allowed to use these items, and we don't worry about the hair coming out. So why would the braita before say that it is problematic if you think it's authored by Rabbi Shimon? Eloha va Rabbi Yehuda. Both braitot are Rabbi Yehuda. V'trei tanai alibad Rabbi Yehuda. And there are two tanaim, quoting the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Haitan alibad Rabbi Yehuda savar garir. Haitan alibad Rabbi Yehuda savar lo garir. So this is basically a machloket then in the mitziyut about how does sand and neter work. Can it smooth the item out or not? Does it work or not? If you think it works, then it's, even though it's davar she'eino mitkaven, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that is asur. If you don't think it works, then there's no problem here because you didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do any malacha, and therefore they're permissible to use on Shabbat. Now, with regards to this Nazir, I'll just mention it in passing. We'll get to this later in the Masechta with Psik Reshe, but there is a large Tshuvat HaRadvaz with regards to this issue by the Nazir, brushing one's hair on Shabbat, combing one's hair on Shabbat. What is considered to be Psik Reshe? Part of the discussion about Psik Reshe is you have two options. One option is that it's going to come out and you won't do the Malacha. The other option is that you will come out and you will do the Malacha. So as long as there's a possibility that the melacha will not happen, that's called davar she'eino mitkaven. If the only option is that what you do is going to be asur, that's called psik reshe. How do I know which is which? When does that threshold happen? The Ravaz discusses is how far-fetched does the other possibility have to be? If it's 99% sure that it's going to happen, but there is a 1% chance that you could do something mutar, is that enough? to say that it's not a psik reshe? Or do you have to have a reasonable assumption that you could do the alternative, which would be mutar? And it's a question about how reasonable does the alternative have to be, and that's what the Rabbaz discusses over here in terms of brushing one's hair. You could say, in a far-fetched case, some crazy scenario, that he wouldn't pull hair out if he combed it with a comb, a thin comb. Is that enough to rely on? Or is it, no, that's not sufficient. You have to have a real plausibility of the alternative happening in order to make it that it's not psik reshe. But just know that this discussion over here plays heavily into that distinction between Devarein Mitzkaven and psik reshe about what is that called threshold percentage that has to be possible or plausible in terms of doing Dabar Shel Heter. By Mayim Kimta, Rabbi Yehuda. So now the Gemara says, oh, you establish now the bright is Rabbi Yehuda. Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the rest of the bright? You're allowed to wash your hands, your face, your feet with this Neter and Kol. Ha, Me'avir Seyar. It's going to cause some removal of hair. It's clear that the problem of using it for shampoo is that it's going to cause some of the hair to be removed. And that's problematic. So how could the latter part of the bright to say, oh, by hands, feet, and face, it's okay. This is Rabbi Yehuda. Even Davar Sheinu Mitkaven is problematic for Rabbi Yehuda. So, Ibayitayma b'katan, v'yitayma b'isha, v'yitayma b'saris. Talking about someone who does not have facial hair. Someone who doesn't have this problem. So either a katan, a minor, or a woman, or a saris, someone who's impotent that doesn't reach the point of puberty that they don't grow facial hair. That person can wash their face because we're not fearful of them removing hair. There is no hair to remove. From Rabbi Yehuda, Afar Levinta Shari. We talk about a crushed brick. The dust from a crushed brick, that is mutar. I'm Rav Yosef. Kuspa diasmin shari. And Rashi translates this as psolet shumshumin. That is the residue, the leftovers of the sesame. Just looking from the word, I would say it looks like it has something to do with jasmine. Amarava afar pilpule shari. Dust of the crushed peppercorns is mutar. Amravsheshis bardo shari. Talk about barad, that is mutar. My bardo, what is that? Amarav Yosef. This bardo is tilta olo, third ohalo, a third tilta aso, and a tilta sigle. So there's one third aloe, one third aso, which is hadas myrtle, and one third sigle, which is violet. You can see that in Rashi, it calls it viol. That ratio, and if you have that, then it's mutar to use on Shabbat. Amar Nuchemi bar Yosef, kohecha deleka ruba oholo shapir dami. As long as aloe is not the majority ingredient in here, then it is fine. Aloe? It's a like thick liquid. Yeah, gel-like. Yeah. What's the problem with aloe? It's a sui labain, ole tzaktech ke borit umeshir seyar. It's to whiten, to cleanse, like borit umeshir seyar. It removes hair. So that's the problem. This aloe, the problem of using it on Shabbat is that it takes out hair. So as long as it's not the majority ingredient, we don't worry about it. All right, so all these items that we mentioned before, all these items are permissible to wash your face with them, to cleanse your face. We don't worry about them taking out the hair, even though all of them are abrasive in some way. These all are materials that they used to cleanse, and unlike our soap today, they were using things that were abrasive in order to move the dirt or that which was on them. They do still have, some of these stores have these natural types of cleansers that involve, have like sand or abrasive items in them to clean the dead skin and to remove the dead skin. All these items here are these abrasive items, and these Amoraim are saying that they are permissible to use on Shabbat, because they don't necessarily result in the removal of hair, except for the one exception we say here, when there's aloe, too much aloe in there. Otherwise, all of these items are permissible to use to wash with on Shabbat. What is the din with regards to, Rashi says, smashing these olives against a stone? These are bitter olives, and by pressing them or smashing them against the stone, they will become sweetened. They will improve their flavor somehow. And whatever it is that allows it or works over here, are you allowed to do this on Shabbat? Wait a minute, who says you're allowed to do it during a weekday? Forget about Shabbat. Why? And we don't allow you to do it because it's going to cause you to lose some of this food here. It's the mistreatment of the food because the food's going to get ruined and then you won't be able to eat it. It won't be edible anymore. Let's say this argues on Shmuel. Damar Shmuel said, Adam kol tzarcho bepat. First, can use bread for whatever he needs. Whatever his needs are, he may use the bread, even though it's not eating. Or when he uses it, it won't be edible anymore. No, the Gemara says, no, you can separate, you can differentiate between these two. Pat, lo mi'isa. Bread does not become disgusting even after you use it for something else. You know, say you rest something on top of it, use it as a stand. The bread remains bread, and you can eat it afterwards. It's not a problem. Hani mi'isa. These have a liquid involved with them. Anytime you have something that has a liquid involved, then they get dirty, they get disgusting if you use them or you do something else with them. Meimar Marzutra Ravashi, Abu Yatve, they were sitting together, Aitu Lukamayu Bardo. They brought before them that soap, this barda. Ameimar Ravashi Mashu. Meimar Ravashi washed their hands with it. Marzutra lo Masha. He didn't wash his hands or his face with it. Amrelo Savala Marla Hadam Rav Sheshet. Do you don't subscribe to what Sheshet says, Bardo Shori? That he said, you're allowed to use this on Shabbat. Amrelo. Rav Mordechai Bar Minei Demar. Tafilu Bechal Nami Lo Svirle. He doesn't hold of it even on a weekday. Sever Laki Aitan Adetanyo. Migarer Adam Gildei Tzo'av Gildei Makah Shal Besaro. Person's allowed to scrape off the feces that's hardened on him or the scabs from a cut. Bishvil Tzaro. If it's bothering him, if it's causing him discomfort, then he's allowed to remove it. In Bishvil Yapot. If it's to make himself look more beautiful, Asur. What's the problem with making yourself look more beautiful? She says, "Mishum lo yobash giver simlat isha." That certain sort of primping, preparing oneself, is considered to be the area of women, and it's inappropriate for men to do this. Over here, when they do this type of activity, they are acting the equivalent to what we'd call wearing women's clothing. They're taking up activities that are usually done by women. So over here, that would not be permissible, be simply doing it to beautify himself, which is an activity that we wouldn't permit for a man to do. Ve'inu, k'man savrua. Correct, correct. Many of these things, dyeing one's hair, putting on makeup, plucking hair, certain things that the Gemara says in other places are problematic for men to do because those are considered to be women's activities. Now, ve'inu, k'man savrua, but they still used it. So what's the story with the other two Amoraim? Person can wash his hands, his feet, and his face to beautify himself for his creator. That all your activities should be done for l'man Hashem. As Rashi says, a person's created b'tzelem Elokim, and therefore in order to give kavod, give respect to his creator, he has to present the b'tzelem Elokim in the proper way. Because he's as if he's presenting God's image to the world. And someone has to present themselves in a proper way. And therefore it's permitted to cleanse oneself, to make oneself properly adorned, and have a face that can be shown to the public. Rashi brings a second interpretation, which is, the person who sees someone beautiful, you make a bracha on them. So we see that there's some value in that that's going to cause a Kiddush Hashem. If a person is beautiful and acts appropriately, that's also a Kiddush Hashem. How far that goes is a good question. How much can you do Bishvil Kono versus Bishvil personal beauty? Here the Gemara gives no definition to it of where that threshold is, but there's some line between proper presentation versus beautifying oneself to the point where it's considered to be a women's activity. I'm saying it's somewhat subjective here. It doesn't seem like the Gemara has an objective line. But right, the difference between hygiene and primping, vanity.
Is this whole section talking about Shabbat?
Well, he said, why did he not do it? My answer, he wouldn't even do it on Chol. It had nothing to do with Shabbat. He wouldn't put this soap on, because he considered it to be an activity that was not permissible, even on a weekday. So then the Gemara says, well, what about them? What did they think? They had two issues. One is Chol. They overcame that by saying that this is hygienic. They're preparing themselves to be presentable to the public. What about Shabbat? They have the other statement before by the Amorim that it's permitted to use on Shabbat. So that's two stages. It's permissible on Chol. Once I know it's permissible on Chol, is it also permissible on Shabbat? The answer is yes, because it doesn't take off here. There's a very, very important Tosafot here. It's fundamental to today. It's something that's changed probably in the last years in Halacha, and that's something that this Tosafot says. The Gemara says over here you're allowed to remove certain items because of pain, because they cause you discomfort. Tosafot says over here, Bishvil Tzaro, Adam Shori. If the only pain you have is that you're embarrassed to appear in public like this, that is considered to be pain. There's no greater pain than that. Until in the last years, and this is even in the medical field, psychological or mental pain was not considered to be a medical condition. It wasn't considered to be tzar. Tzar meant physical pain. That's the way the Gemara views it. That's the way all the poskim view it. Tzar, when we talk about pain, or any dispensation that comes from pain, that's talking about physical pain. Mental or psychological pain was not a consideration in the halachic process. Both with the advancement in the medical field to also consider psychological pain as being a real pain and a real factor. So too now, halacha has moved in that direction, that psychological pain has become more and more a factor in making decisions. Again, whether there's certain times that you have dispensations on Shabbat, certain times you can violate certain halachot when there is pain. Does that include psychological pain? This Tosafot says yes, psychological pain is on par with physical pain. And so, for instance, can a man who is prematurely gray, can they dye their hair? Because over there, they think it's going to hurt their shidduch chances, it's going to affect them. Similar things we have by women who, unfortunately, lost a husband very young, and they want to go date, and they say wearing a sheitel is going to impede their ability to get shidduchim. There, Reb Moshe is also matir that she can take off the sheitel in order to get a shidduch. We see that the psychological pain, the embarrassment that a person feels, does give dispensations that would otherwise be only available to something with physical pain. That obviously has to be treaded on carefully, because that can go to the nth degree and be matter everything, because someone's embarrassed. It has to be something where it makes sense and within the realm of normalcy. But a fundamental Tosafot here in two lines says something that's incredible, that psychological pain has the same status as physical pain. Right, next part of the Gemara. Belazar ben Azari omer kupa, matel tzidav, notel shema yitol. So we said in the Mishnah, how do you take it out of the hatmona? So the Chachamim say you just take it out straight. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says you have to tip it over because we're afraid of it collapsing in. So I'm Rabbi Abba, I'm Rabbi Chiya Ba'ashi. Akol modim shimnit kalkala guma shesur lachzir. Everybody agrees if you had this insulated hole and then the sides, the insulation on the side falls into the middle, you know how to fix it. It's done. You can't put it back on Shabbat. You've lost your insulated hole on Shabbat. It's done. V'chachamim amrim no telo machzir. Our Mishnah says the Chachamim say you can take it out and put it back. Hey Chidami, what's the case? Idlo nit kalkala guma. If the guma did not collapse, I mean the insulation on the walls didn't fall into the hole, then the Rabbanan makes sense over here that you can take it back. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria? Even if the insulation on the sides falls in, you still have to fix according to the Chachamim. And that's what the Chiddush in the Mishnah is. The Chachamim say yes, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria says no. Rabbi says, well, it's still intact. Do we worry about this event? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says we worry about the fact that it might fall apart, therefore we don't let you take it out fully. We force you to tip it on its side and not remove it from the hole to avoid that problem ever happening. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe we don't worry about that eventuality. We let you take it out. If it does fall in, you can't put it back. But we don't worry about the fact that it's normally going to fall in or will fall in. You take it out, you put it back like you normally do. I'm Ravuna. Hi, silly kusta. This saligusta, which Rashi defines as esev shu na'el mar'eh ulariach, something that's beautiful to look at, to smell, you're allowed to take it out on Shabbat. So it's something that normally is planted, which on Shabbat would be asur to remove from its place, because then you'd be oker, davar migidulo, you'd be taking something out of where it's growing. If before Shabbat, his datza, he puts it into the dirt, shalfa pulls it out again, father datza, and then puts it back in, then he's made it to the point where it's loose. It's not really planted. He can pull it in, pull it out. No problem, sharia. That is mutar. V'ilav, asir. If not, then it's asur, because then you're pulling it out of its place of growth. Amashmo, hai sakina de bene urbe. This knife that they, to store it, they stick it between the rows of bricks. So that's in a house. How do they store their knife? They had nowhere to put it, so they stuck it into the wall in order to store the knife. So when you stick it into the wall, if datza, shelf of other datza, if you stab it into the wall, remove it, and then put it back in again, sharia. You can do that on Shabbat. V'lav, if not, asur, because then you are, what we call it, boneh. You're doing some sort of physical improvement in the wall of the house by creating a hole that you're placing the knife into. Or by removing the knife, you're opening up that hole. Marzutra v'ite ma'avashimar, bigordita dekani, shaper dami. If you're talking about a case of kanim, of the dikalim, of the palm trees, they come out of the trunk, and they come out very tightly together, and there's a small gapping between them, that you could stick in the knife without any problem. Shaper dami. That you could do even without preparation, because there is a natural gapping there, and you could put it in.
The alternative girsa in Rashi is that it's just kanim, which refers to reeds. These are tightly packed reeds, and you're allowed to insert the knife in between. And as Rashi points out, we don't worry about the fact that shemi yigroya klipa, that maybe somehow that'll remove the skin, the bark, and then it'd be chayav for mochek. So even though there is an insertion of the knife which has some resistance, nevertheless, we don't assume that that is going to cause any problem. What's very interesting from this is halacha that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch in Siman Shin Yud Dalet, Seif Aleph, paskens this way, v'maya sakin takua mi'erev Shabbat b'chavit. If there was a knife that was wedged into a barrel on Erev Shabbat, between the planks of the barrel, he has a knife wedged in there. Mutar lo tzio l'hachniso. You can take that knife in and out. Shreinu mikaven l'hosif. Because he has no intention of widening that area. you had to make it a hole or to make it an opening. The Ramah says about that, B'davka shotzio gam kein pamachat mibojom. As long as he's done it already once, while it was before Shabbat. Like our Gemara says over here, that you put it in, took it out, and put it in. If you never did that, asur. It's a problem because by definition, when you pull it out, it's going to create a hole. Because you're going to make a hole or an opening for the barrel. Because now you're making a mouth or an opening for the barrel. So here you have a machloket between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah with regards to this issue of the knife being wedged into the barrel. Why is it that there is a difference of opinion over here? We have a Gemara here. Our Gemara is pretty clear that when you're in a tight space, and by pulling it out, it would create a hole that's problematic. Like, for instance, with the house. How come the Shulchan Aruch paskins otherwise? So the Mishnah Berurah explains over here that the shita of the Shulchan Aruch is premised on a belief that when it comes to psik reshe bidine dirabonon, when you have something that will be
an unintentional
automatic outcome with a din dirabonon, that is mutar. There is no psigresha in dinei derabanan. Psigresha is only applicable by dinei deoraita. The Ramah obviously argues and says, even in dinei derabanan, there's a din of psigresha. Over here, we're talking about the barrel. And as the Mishnah Berurah explains, when you open up the hole, you're not opening it up for a bidirectional mouth. And therefore, it's only an iser derabanan. And here, you're violating an iser derabanan by psigresha. So the Machaber says that that's fine, because there is no psigresha when it comes to a din derabanan. On the other hand, the Ramah says that's problematic. The Mishnah Berurah says that the only time that we will subscribe to the position of the Shulchan Aruch, that psigresha does not apply in a din derabanan, is that when we're talking about a melacha shein tzricha legufa. So if it's a melacha shein tzricha legufa that results in an iser derabanan, that if it's mekalkel, that there is no problem. So you have a combination of melacha shein tzricha legufa and mekalkel, which result or leave an iser derabanan, there we won't worry about psik reisha. But in general, psik reisha applies equally to dinei deraita as it does to dinei derabanan. Amalei Rav Mordechai the Rav Meiti Rav Ktina to Yufta. He asked a question on this. Hatomein lefet utznonot. Someone who buries a turnip or a radish tachet a gifin under the vines. In the vineyard, under the vines, he puts them there. They used to do that to store. That was their ability to store vegetables. These are root vegetables. So what does he do? He takes them and he buries them in the ground in order to store them. Imaya miktzat alav migulim. If some of the leaves were still sticking out, eno choshesh. And he doesn't have to worry about lo mishum kil ayim. V'lo mishum shvi'it, v'lo mishum ma'aser. V'nitalim b'shabbat. And you're allowed to take them out on Shabbat. According to Rashi, the leaf sticking out is only relevant with regards to Shabbat. All the other items, you didn't plant them. There's nothing to talk about over here. You didn't put them in. There's no problem if you don't plant them, because kilayim would be a problem with vegetables next to a vineyard. That's not a problem if you didn't plant them. Same thing, it's not called working the ground if you store things in the ground on Shvi'it. That's not working the field. That's permissible on Shvi'it. Also, maaser. For maaser, you're not chayav in maaser just because you put them in the ground, because you're storing them there. You're not planting them. For Shabbat, you have a problem because the earth itself, the dirt, is muksa. So in order to be able to remove them, you need a handle to pull them out of the ground. If you don't have a handle, you're not going to be able to get them out of the ground. You're not going to be able to get through the dirt to pull them out. So that's for Shabbat. But what do you see here? You see here, there's no requirement of placing them, taking them out, placing them in again. There's no demand that you make them loose enough that they come out. Simply placing them in the ground is enough, and you can pull them out on Shabbat without any problem. We don't have this demand that it be worked on first, so that's loose. And that'll be a question on what we just said before. So now, of course, Tosfot points out over here, this is a case with nothing rooted. If it roots, then you have a problem here. We're obviously talking about when they haven't taken root at all. The Oruch, in the name of Rav Haigon, has a different gear. So here he says, Imayu miktzatam migulim. Not that the leaves are exposed, but a portion of the turnip or the radish is exposed over here. And that would apply to all of these items. If you believe that's the girsa, that's what determines that it's not called planting. Planting is you bury the whole thing. When you leave it partially exposed, that shows that you're storing it and not planting it. According to them, that would apply to all of these items over here, and not just to the din of Shabbat. Okay, we'll stop over here.